Hello and happy Tuesday, my friends. This is Danielle Carter, and I'd like to welcome you back to another informative episode of Cisco Champion Radio, where we provide insights and visibility into products and solutions across the Cisco portfolio and trending topics across our industry. If you like our podcast, please follow us and feel free to share your favorite episodes with your colleagues and friends. If you have thoughts or comments on what we should cover in a future episode, let us know. Talk with us on Twitter at Cisco Champion. All right. While virtualization technology has dramatically changed the way IT resources are used, industrial operations have not seen its benefits in any significant way. In this conversation, our panelists discuss the gains manufacturers can expect to see by virtualizing industrial automation control systems and explore solutions to get there. We have our champions and experts here to lead the conversation, so let's get started with introductions first. Jonathan, let's get started with you. First of all, thank you, because we know it's 2 a.m. where you are. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do?
Thanks, Danielle. So my name's Jonathan Mahadi. I work in the mining sector, and I'm primarily an operation technology engineer, helping with standards within the business and also design from an operational standpoint. And I'm super excited to be here. This topic is definitely blew my mind when I first saw it come up, and I wasn't realized how far advanced we were in the industrial space with virtualization. So thank you very much for having me here.
Of course. Thank you so much for joining us. Len, you're up. Tell us who you are and what it is that you do.
Yeah, my name is Lynn Ledford, and I work for a reseller in the Pacific Northwest, Sirium Networks. I'm really glad to be part of this podcast and learn about this this new angle we're going today. So thank you.
Of course, of course. Last but not least from our champions, Liam, tell us who you are and what it is that you do.
Hi, Danielle. Thanks for having me again. I'm Liam Keegan. I'm a longtime CCIE and just sort of automation fanatic. And I've done a bunch of work on sort of the industrial networking side of it. So sort of the IE switching and cyber vision, ICE, that whole thing, and know next to nothing other than how to spell PLC. So I am super excited to find out more about today's topic. So thanks so much for having me.
All right. So on this episode, we actually have two guests who will be joining us on today. So Paul and Roland, in no specific order, can you both tell us who you are and what it is that you guys do?
Sure. I'll get started. I'm Paul Didier. I'm a solution architect in Cisco's industrial IoT business unit. This is a business unit that kind of helps deliver the industrial switching, i.e. industrial routing, industrial wireless, industrial cybersecurity. Liam, you mentioned the cyber vision. So we do that. My job is a solution architect. So I take that technology and other Cisco technology and build solutions for the manufacturing production space. So that's a little bit my role. Roland?
Yes, my name is Roland Wagner. I'm the head of the product marketing at the Codesys Group. Codesys is one of the most important software suppliers for automation technology. And my role is to explain the products around Codesys to different kinds of user groups, from device manufacturers in the automation industry to users realizing machines, plans, whatever, up to operators who are going to use virtualized control system today or in the future.
Well, thank you guys both for joining us. We really, really appreciate it. So now I'm going to kick it over to the champions to get started with some questions.
So maybe we could start with Roland. So, you know, whenever I've walked into like an industrial manufacturing plant, right, you kind of go to the machine that's doing the big important thing. And then there's the one box that's got the PLCs in it that, you know, with the sticker on it that says, do not ever touch, because nobody understands exactly how this works. And it's something that was made, you know, on the planet Krypton 700 years ago. Can you sort of explain to us, and I think I was joking, but not that much, but can you explain to us sort of what Codesys does and kind of like what problem in the market it's trying to solve, and sort of how these lines and facilities are different using sort of the Codesys approach versus the traditional unicorn PLC approach?
Codesys is just one more software that runs on such 700 years old PLCs. Oh, kidding. In the past, every device supplier realized his own hardware and realized his own software. By the introduction of the standard IEC 61131 about 30 years ago, there's now a standard which can be implemented by software companies such as Codesys, and which enables hardware manufacturers to realize PLCs without developing their own software for the programming and the development of the PLC applications. Now, with our software today, many device manufacturers just got rid of the software problem and just concentrate on their hardware, on that what they have as their main benefit, and realize then that case a kind of, let's say, standard, where as well, and this is now the next point, automation engineers can switch easily from one device to another, from one brand to another brand, because the same software is running. It's a little bit like Windows running on different computers. So this is the main feature, or the main, let's say, benefit why Codesys became so important, and why Codesys has today about 500 device manufacturers as customers and more than 300,000 users worldwide which work with that software. Just the lack of being dependent on a certain hardware manufacturer.
I'm one of those network engineers. So when I go into these big areas, you know, they're making a lot of noise and doing a lot of things, and there's a lot of wiring everywhere, right? So I just couldn't get my head around how this actually works, right? So like at the moment, you know, a lot of process control environments would be very physical based with PLCs and HMIs and possibly IPCs and on the ground. How can that be virtualized, and like how do you deploy it? So what I mean by that is, you know, there will be, you're controlling pumps that may take a physical signal, et cetera, et cetera. So how does that, I guess, be taken into consideration with this virtualization?
Yeah, this is a good question. So in fact, what is executing the PLC code is always a software. And this is a certain runtime system which is running on either dedicated devices or, let's say, standardized devices such as industrial PCs, which are then turning into a PLC by means of Windows or Linux or whatever is below as an operating system. Now, if we take a hyper-convergent infrastructure, a virtualized system, and when we containerize this infrastructure and put the same runtime system on the same real-time operating system, then for the user, it looks exactly the same as before. So there is no further training necessary at first step. But now the idea is that they can realize different application jobs on one hardware without the interference from one to the other. So, and because the automation industry is quite conservative, this was not a topic in the past, because a lot of engineers of the automation industry, let's say like this, are a little bit careful giving their benefit or their, let's say, experience to the hands of IT guys. Yeah, they would rather have the hand over their OT technology, and this is maybe one reason why this did not happen before. Today IT and OT are becoming more closer, and therefore this is much more likely to do it, and people are much more open for that.
Well, the light bulb just went on from the security side of this, right? So if you use Codesys, so let me just maybe regurgitate what you said. So instead of like directly programming some low-level piece of hardware, right, with your, you know, with your business logic or, you know, whatever it takes to run a counter or a temperature sensor or something like that, instead of programming it on the lower level hardware, you're using the Codesys as like an abstraction layer, right? In the same way that you use like VMware to set up a virtual machine, you're using Codesys to basically write your logic. You put that image on hardware that's purpose built. So if you need something that's, you know, that can sustain 800 degree temperature, you buy that. Or if you need something that can go in a freezer, you buy that, right? But then the Codesys sort of like what you write is the runtime doesn't have any sort of awareness of what it's running on. It just looks like a host, and it interfaces with the things. And then so from a security perspective, I think like the magic then is like you can actually patch the underlying operating systems in a timely manner, so you avoid the problem of walking into like a plant floor and finding the Windows XP PC. Is that a fair assessment?
That's exactly
correct.
I was just going to add, there's like in a lot of these industrial locations, there's an industrial PC that's doing management or, you know, like the workstation for an engineer. There's an HMI out there. And in terms of other compute, there's PLCs. All we're trying to say is that we think now that networks are fast enough, deterministic enough, resilient enough, where we can move those workloads, if you want to look at it like that, to, I don't think we're suggesting put these in a general cloud somewhere. Clearly there's latency, clearly resiliency considerations, but you know, what's the problem if I add another switch and put this into a data center that's, you know, within a kilometer or a mile of my production facility? I'm only adding kind of like hopefully microseconds of latency / jitter to the environment. Can I actually start running some of these applications on cheaper virtual, you know, hyper-converged, architectures? I think a joint customer of ours refers to it as edge cloud for production, right? But it's cloud technologies, but really running them close to get over the latency and, you know, resilience, some of the latency and resiliency challenges. But it's a combination of having a, you know, being able to run this on a virtual, you know, running virtual PLCs, so to say, on, for example, a VMware or some other platform, and then having a network that can basically help you connect that virtualization platform to the brownfield environment where all of the devices are, right? The robots, the drives, the safety sensors, and all of the other stuff out there. You can't really move those because they have to be in the physical environment. But if you can move that stuff to a virtualization platform, you know, one of the challenges, cybersecurity, updating things becomes a lot easier.
Yeah. And also, as we make the
edit comments, as you said, Liam, what about the devices that run underwater or at frozen state? Of course, virtualization will not replace everything, but in environments where we have anyway a kind of fabric, a kind of workplace where we have infrastructure that is available, this makes absolutely sense. But for sure, not in every small, tractor or truck or everywhere PLCs are found today, virtualization would make sense. But in many cases, it will make sense. And therefore, this, Paul already said, this regarding of the data transfer time is a important topic, because this is then what the cycle time and the determination of such a PLC is really necessary.
So I think back a few years ago when we started virtualizing all of our Windows servers, we went from bunches of 48U racks to now I've got 6 servers sitting in a hyperconverged. People were very concerned that we would have issues with latency. Could they handle the load? So as we move our PLC compute from the edge by the machine back to the data center, the network is going to be very, very critical that we do not have delay, jitter, packet loss, et cetera. Is that what Cisco's bringing to the table with the new line of industrial Ethernet switches and routers and firewalls?
Not just that, but yes, we are bringing all of that there. But we're also bringing, I'm going to add a software-defined kind of concept where, you know, a lot of these applications were designed and arguably need kind of like layer 2 adjacency. The PLC was, you know, not running over a broad internet. It was just talking layer 2 communication protocols to its devices. What we're doing is kind of like virtualizing that and allowing the, let's say, that this hyper-converged environment, this edge cloud, to have that, maintain that layer 2 adjacency over what, you know, if I may, it's a software-defined, a software-defined access architecture. So that allows that virtualization use of VXLANs and some other things to, you know, maintain that L2 adjacency, as Roland saying. You know, the virtual PLC doesn't really know about all of this. It just knows it can talk quickly in the same manner to all of its end devices and control and manage them like it was before.
So will this software-defined network architecture allow us to do micro-segmentation? So we can segment off certain parts of the network, increase our security, get more monitoring, and maybe not have a broadcast storm?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's exactly all of the benefits and features you get when you kind of run it across that kind of modern network. But you're maintaining the deterministic low latency, very high resiliency as well.
Oh, thank you.
And as we already said, due to the fact that micro-segmentation is not only possible in the network, but as well in the PLC, because now you can set up different and multiple PLCs, you can as well micro-segment the PLC application in different virtualized PLCs. It's easy to maintain them, to update one of them, because it's just a piece of software you need to update and it's not interfering with the others. And it's as well easy in kind of an attack to delete one of these virtualized PLCs without any hardware work. You know, just shut it down, install a new one, deploy the application on it, and run it again. So as well, the security is hardened due to the virtualization.
Just like this is really exciting stuff, right? But I just want to temper it a little bit. You know, everyone knows operational technology has completely different mechanics versus normal information technology, right? So, in some industries, safety is a lot more of a kind of a prevalent thing. And other industries, it'll be production or, you know, combination of safety and production. One of the aspects that I'm really keen to hear from both of you is around cybersecurity, because that's a big thing that we have to deal with every day in our lives, and especially with the IEC 62443. How does this align with that kind of, I guess, principles and architecture?
I can start. I think it aligns really well because it enables a lot of that the segmentation and updating that six like to maintain high securities 62443 things. I think it enables a lot of the zone conduit models are much easier to apply in these scenarios when it's across a software-defined network, and then you can apply a lot more of this specific segmentation when you have hundreds of little networks out there where all of this stuff currently exists. It's much harder to get the visibility and deploy a lot of that out there because it's just you've got hundreds or thousands of these little networks to go find, manage, and secure.
Yeah, and in addition to that, we have the problem that today's automation systems do want to benefit from internet connections, so all from the nice stuff that we all know today. So they're all connected. They want to be connected because they can easily then get updates, get new information, or get even information for the automation technology from the internet. For example, if you drive a production line and you have a photovoltaic device, you could get the weather forecast via internet and make the application using the information for optimization of the control system of energy consumption and things like that. And this means that segmentation in the application and segmentation as well in the network is an important topic for nowadays and future automation systems. So in this direction, this virtualization helps us to harden all these systems against potential attacks.
Smart instrumentation is something that definitely is seen a lot more in the industry as well. So that's a really good call out. Thank you.
So if an organization has sort of the traditional model, and I'm sure that this isn't something where it's like Rome is built in a day, right? This is sort of like an iterative process to evolve the manufacturing floor. Maybe you guys could sort of share with our listeners how an organization starts to adopt kind of this CODESYS way of looking at the world, right? And how do you go from zero to one on this approach, and is it a lift and shift, or run it down for us, please?
Yeah, first step, you need to have, let's say, a hardware that is more open than before. In the past, you just had a controller from a brand, and then you get the software from that, and that's it. They have no chance to add some software. So, at first step, you should use an open software and a device that is open enough to install the software in it. So, this is the first step in replacing a dedicated controller by a more open device that may have multiple softwares on it. And when you have no experience with that, the next step into virtualization will for sure not work. So this is the first step. The next step is to see, okay, whether the hardware is powerful enough to have not just one PLC application or multiple PLC applications. Then you could think about the containerization in order to, let's say, use the performance of the CPU in a more open way. If you have that, then start with one PLC, virtual PLC on such a container, or a second or third one, and then see how this works. Of course, then the next step will be the virtualization of the network system. Today, we rather look on physical networks and covering, as I already said, the distances via switches, covering the latencies via the switches. But the next step will be to go into the time-sensitive networks and to virtualize as well the network technology by using just one single cable. But you're fully right. Start from the scratch with the first steps, using such an open software on an open device, make things experience, and then multiply this experience and virtualize step by step.
From my perspective, you know, like Liam, I think it starts with a lot of manufacturers, you know, when they're putting together their factory, there's a lot of, how should I say, trust and simplification in many ways from their perspectives. Like, I want a machine builder or a line builder, just give me a line that, you know, produces my parts, right? Or produces whatever. And I think there needs to be a little bit of a shift in the thinking there to say, I want to take advantage of this. In many ways, many of the vendors are also trying to, you know, do cloud connectivity or whatever else to it. And they need to move away from a model where, you know, I'm gonna just have a bunch of pieces and parts and maybe kind of connect them together to, I need a network where, you know, I can connect to the sensors and all of the devices. Yes, my controller needs good connectivity to them to manage them, but a lot of these devices can provide a lot more information, a lot of telemetry, a lot of useful, you know, information for a lot of these other kind of applications. So you need to move to kind of like, I need to interconnect this stuff a lot better. I need to kind of come in with a network that's going to allow me to, you know, connect to these things, move away from, for example, unmanaged switching networks, a lot of independent island networks, and something that's basically interconnected. That's a lot of, you know, Cisco does those kind of like interconnected networks really well. You don't buy a Cisco switch and never connect it to another Cisco switch. You know, it's always kind of like part of a larger network and helping provide that, you know, and then starting with that, you know, moving towards that, you know, you get a little bit more mature, start putting the cybersecurity in there, start looking at, you know, the network management to do all that. And you finally get to a point where, you know, you can actually start about thinking about, you know, applying some of these virtualization applications, providing some of the cloud-based services to it. I think we're talking about the virtualization, but along with, as Roland identified, this is a fully capable internet network that can also integrate in other services that are much further away. And that's kind of like the, you know, where I think customers need to take that first shift and say, I really need a good network. I'm going to start demanding that of my line builders, my machine builders, and really get good networks in there so I can get access to that data and I can get the security and the visibility. Right.
It seems to me like a use case. I mean, something that everybody wants to do right now is taking that telemetry and getting it in their data lake, right? But right. Usually, I mean, people aren't deploying data lakes out at every plant floor. I mean, that's, you know, in cloud providers, in centralized data centers. So it's almost like the sort of the combination of the network and the platform allows you to do that almost transparently by simply just shipping the traffic where it needs to go and not having to rewrite your business applications. Exactly. Or at least that's the way it should be, right? In the perfect world.
Yeah. But clearly this virtualization, I think there's a lot of benefit and value out of it. I gotta say, I don't, you know, and I think Roland will agree, most of the customers aren't quite ready for it. And it does take some time and effort to understand, you know, get the right networks in place, to get the right technologies in place to kind of like do some of this virtualization. But, you know, if you're running good connected internet, you know, good connected networks, secure networks, you know, there's clearly, you know, another phase that we're getting ready for, and that's this virtualization.
You know, playing off what you just said, finding the right customer, are you noticing one market segment over another that seems to be more willing to adopt this newer technology?
Yes, they are, especially the big operators of machines and plants that do have multiple of PLCs in their brownfield, in their application. And as I already said, they have the problems that updating these devices, maintaining the devices, updating the application code really takes a lot of effort. And this takes a lot of time, and this is annoying for them. So for those operators especially, reducing the amount of hardware by using such edge devices or hyper-convergent infrastructures, this is already a big benefit. This is one thing. The next thing is that, as I already said, hardening the whole security by segmentation of the virtual PLCs and the networks, this is a next big issue, which especially the big operators or machine builders will be very interested in. And of course, further to these big ones, there may be a lot of smaller ones that just see in the virtualization the possibility to use one hardware for multiple automation tasks that today require hardware for every function, which is somehow crazy. Yeah? We just waste a lot of resources in hardware by realizing functions which are in fact just software.
Thank you.
I was just going to
add to that question about the industries. I've been working in the space roughly 20 years, and I've always kind of been told in this larger automation and manufacturing space, and it is, seems to be true that the automotive space is always kind of like pushing a lot of the innovation, you know, building cars for very large scales, for globally scales. You know, they have to get really, really good at the production side and are always kind of like advancing a lot of the production stuff. And, you know, it's I don't think it's any coincidence, but kind of like one of the companies we're working with, there's some newsroom articles and blogs, and they've participated at Cisco Live and stuff. Audi is one of those kind of like leaders. And, you know, I think we provided some good links and stuff, but they're helping kind of push some of these concepts and ideas around the virtualization, with knowing that they need an ecosystem to do it, other manufacturers and the providers to all kind of support it. But it's no surprise that it came out of the automotive industry, kind of pushing some of this stuff in my head.
Yeah, thank you.
Just touching on some of the benefits, right? Like, so let's say we can maintain safety, improve security, you know, improve production. That, like, obviously that's a return on investment just there. But I want to kind of touch a bit more around other benefits. And I'm just thinking out loud here, where I've seen, you know, process control refreshes going through, like it takes years and years, you know, millions of dollars spent just to replace hardware. How does this help improve asset lifecycle management, and I guess other aspects around that kind of lifecycle process? So let's take a day in the life of, hey, I want to upgrade a PLC or upgrade another piece of hardware. How does this help?
I can kind of get started. I think like upgrading a virtual PLC is like, you know, just adding new code to your virtualization platform versus having to distribute it over thousands of, you know, hardware-based PLCs. But I think actually it helps improve the life cycle of that brownfield environment of all the devices that you have out there, in the sense that now you've got connectivity, you've got a lot of the data moving into this virtual platform. You can start running other we talked about Audi, they use this paradigm where if I want a new function, before I have to buy a new box and put it into my production environment. They want to get into a paradigm where I need a new function. I'm going to buy software and put it on my virtualization platform and not have to buy tons of boxes. And I think one of the things is it helps improve the life cycle of a lot of their existing devices, because those devices produce the data, but now you've got applications that can kind of like optimize and improve and look for, you know, sustainability improvements based on those, you know, those devices just providing more telemetry data. I've done work in the process control space, and one of the interesting statistics they told me right up front, you know, most sensors or devices in the field support 500, 1,000, 2,000 data points and information, but the actual control system only uses a handful of those to, you know, operate and maintain operational integrity. But there's a lot more information, you know, just latent out there in these devices. And this is kind of like a mechanism that can say, hey, I don't have to go update all of my sensors and all of my actuators and other things. I, you know, with this virtualization, I can start running, you know, AI applications or predictive maintenance close to it and, you know, basically improve the life cycle of a lot of the stuff that I have out there. You know, just based on it can produce a lot more information, maybe I can, you know, improve the life cycle of it. Does that make any sense?
Talk about making it easier to do a digital twin, right? I mean, you've just sort of have it's just virtual. You take your data from your actual production sources, you put it anywhere you want, and you want to iterate code. Well, you can do that with production data in a non-production manner, right?
So, I mean, can you give us a kind of rough, like an example of how long it would take to actually upgrade a virtual PLC? Like, are we talking hours? Are we talking minutes? Or are we talking days? I mean, I know the process from going around to actually upgrading a PLC hardware upgrading the software on a PLC can actually be quite contentious, right? Roland, do you want to have a crack? Can you give us maybe an idea?
Yeah, sure. Paul was a witness. I showed it last year on the Cisco Live event. And how long did it take? 2 minutes to deploy a virtual PLC on a Linux device? A couple of commands, or today we do it with a deploy tool inside the CODES development system. In fact, what is done is there is a container set up. There is an image deployed on that container, including the runtime system, which is realizing the control system. And then we can work with it, as I said, like with a dedicated controller. We can log into it, download an application, have debugging on that device, have field bus connection via Ethernet-based field bus system, have visualization running and so on. So it really takes a few minutes. So I've shown it so far dozens of time and had never much more time than a few minutes, and it worked all the time.
I like Aleem's concept of a digital twin, because that means you can, you know, test this upgrade path without blowing up in a production environment, right? So that's really important.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm still back where Jonathan was at the beginning of this podcast, where we're going to take a physical box and we're going to virtualize it. But that virtualized box is then going to send a command down an Ethernet cable using Ethernet, right? And it's going to get to a physical device that somehow I'm going to, and in my simple terms, I'm just going to hit a relay, right? I'm going to say open or close. Is there has to be a device on the other end that's converting my Ethernet packet to SIP or another industrial packet, right? So if I'm in a brownfield environment doing a hardware upgrade, I'm going to stand up a virtual environment. I'm going to build virtual PLCs. I've got a cable running out, and then there's devices on the other end that actually convert and talk to these machines.
No, the virtual PLC is going to talk in SIP or Profinet or whatever other language, talk directly to the device. There's no,
So my sensors on the machine have an Ethernet cable? I'm just going to plug Ethernet into that sensor?
A lot of sensors in these industrial place environments are already connected via Ethernet.
No, that's cool. Okay.
They may, there's other technologies, kind of like IO-Link and other stuff, but they almost always end up back in Ethernet to talk to a PLC, to talk to other things.
Yeah, Very often these data are connected together via IO-Link, via some other small systems, and then packed on an Ethernet-based protocol and transmitted to the PLC. This is quite often.
I'm with Len, though. This is like blowing my mind a bit. I'm still, I still can't believe it. I can't believe it's not real butter.
Love to show you guys some of this stuff. So yeah, we'll have it like it. We had it last year at Cisco Live. There's other events that we'll have this on. But yeah, no, it's possible, right? And we're working hard with CodeAssist to kind of like enable these capabilities. And we agree. It sounds like it's going to be a really big and an impactful concept for the industry.
So if I want to learn more about this, is there a venue that I can go to or a platform I can get some information to start wrapping my head around this new technology or this new way of thinking?
Well, we are preparing everything in our store. We have an online store. So what you can do today in order to start to work with it, go to this online store and download for free the CodeAssist development system and play around with it. It's free. And there are even soft PLCs in a trial version, which you can run as a non-virtualized environment today. As I said, first step, work with open platforms, take an industrial PC or take any device and work with it, play with it. And then the next step, in some weeks, we will have the first release of that virtual PLC as well be available on the CodeAssist store. And then you can do the same thing on a containerized environment, having a Linux system, installing the containers, and having multiple of them on one device. So I'm just preparing a demo for a fair here. I have some boards around, which I am using, and I just do it in the same way. It's really amazing. It just works, and I can have multiple PLCs on a board that has enough power for it.
And looking at the store, go ahead.
I was just going to add, I think, Glenn, you bring up a good point. This is a new and an innovative technology. We're kind of working, in a smaller group to prove it out, make sure that it works. We haven't done, I don't think, you can go take a look at CodeAssist and get some good information about, some of the core technologies that make this work. But we're just getting started with, building this into from a Cisco perspective, CVDs, building this into, putting out their solution overviews. Roland and I are working on some of that kind of stuff. I think there's still quite a bit of work to do for us to kind of like start describing this and getting it out there in the field. I don't want to say that, I think that's a really good point and something, Roland and I are and Vivek, who's also on the call, we're working to kind of like get that out there. We've got some teasers out there, that newsroom article from Audi and some of the blogs and stuff, but we need to do more to kind of like get this formalized and described to people like you and the rest of the ecosystem.
Just in sort of the couple, in prep for the call, I mean, going to the CodeAssist store, just to make our listeners aware of sort of how open and accessible it is. The IDE, the whole development environment, can be downloaded and run. It just runs on x86, right? And there's also a CodeAssist control for Raspberry Pi. So it looks to me like, just based on the release notes, it looks like the camera is supported, that the GPIO is supported. You can basically turn a $35 Raspberry Pi into a PLC in the CodeAssist development environment. And you're not having to come out of pockets hundreds of thousands of dollars for anything. It's all right there. And there's a YouTube video on how to do it. So I would encourage our listeners to take a look at that if this is something that interests you. So kudos to CodeAssist for like making an open ecosystem. I hate when stuff is paywalled and you can't get any information. So, thumbs up from us.
I think one of the things we need to try figure out, Liam, between myself and you, is how to automate a coffee machine, because I could do it one right now.
I just a cappuccino waterfall.
That's, That's exactly.
Yeah, there are already projects somewhere in the internet where people pimp their washing machines. So maybe this would be making your wife happy.
Yeah,
or you yourself if you're washing yourself.
I was going to say that's exactly the demo we have at we'll have at Cisco Live and had at Cisco Live Amsterdam is automating a coffee machine, coffee grinder, and coffee machine. Yeah,
that's awesome.
All any right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Are there any more questions? That's what I was going to do. I was going to turn it over and see if there were any more questions from the champions or if Roland or Paul had anything else that they wanted to add before we close.
The only thing I can add, thank you very much for inviting me. It was a pleasure to discuss with these champions here.
Me too. Thank you. Good conversation.
Great. Always fun.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. That's another great episode on the books. To our listeners, if you want to continue your learning on today's topics, you can check out the resources provided in the show notes below. And this is your weekly reminder. You can subscribe to Cisco Champion Radio on your favorite streaming platform and receive alerts on our latest releases. So wherever you're listening to us, make sure to click on that subscribe or follow button now. Thank you for listening in and see you again next time.